Do words ever seem inadequate? Not able to communicate what you really feel? Eliza Doolittle certainly felt that way.
Oh, words, words, words! I'm so sick of words! I get words all day through, first from him, now from you. Is that all you blighters can do? Sing me no song, read me no rhyme. Don't waste my time, show me. Please don't implore, beg or beseech. Don't make a speech, show me. But never do I ever want to hear another word. There isn't one I haven't heard. Here we are together in what ought to be a dream. Say one more word and I'll scream. Haven't your arms hungered for mine? Please don't explain, show me, show me. Don't wait until wrinkles and lines pop out all over my brow.
John Francis would appreciate Eliza Doolittle's frustration. Well, not that he was lovesick, but he got so sick of words that he stopped talking for nearly 20 years. He also refused to ride in cars, planes, or trains for 22 years. Why? Because he wanted to change the world. Back in the early 70s, Francis was a young activist in California who cared passionately about the environment. He told Steve Paulson his life changed when two oil tankers collided near the Golden Gate Bridge.
It was an oil spill in San Francisco Bay in 1971, and that really started me thinking about that I really needed to do something.
So what did you do then?
Well, at the time, I didn't know what to do. The only thing I could think of was to stop riding in automobiles.
Because you didn't want to support the oil industry?
Exactly, and I went for a walk one day, and I just didn't come back. And on the way, I decided that I wasn't going to get back into an automobile. I was going to just keep walking.
But usually you have a life to go back to, or a job, or school, or something like that.
Yeah, and I did. I had, you know, things that I had been doing. I was managing a music group, and I wrote my parents, and I called my parents up and told them I had given up riding in automobiles. They're living in Philadelphia on the East Coast. And I told them that, and my father said, why didn't you do this when you were 16? We could have saved a lot of trouble and lots of money. I didn't have an answer for him. I said, I'm doing this for the environment. I guess it was a few months later that I had to write my mother that I had stopped talking. And the reason I stopped talking was because I just got into so many arguments about what one person could do.
Out of your experience of not driving anymore.
Absolutely. I remember walking along the road, someone would stop in my little community and say, John, you want to ride? I'd say, no, I'm going to walk to Point Reyes. It's a 4-mile walk, you know. What are you going to walk for? And I had to defend what I was doing. I had to defend that why I wasn't riding in a car. And was I trying to make them look bad? And in some ways, I was. I thought that everyone should not ride in cars.
It's a pretty radical step to not ride in any cars or buses or trains or anything like that. But then to stop talking for years. And you did both those things. For how many years did you not ride in any motorized transportation? And then how long did you stop talking?
Well, let's see. For 22 years, I didn't ride in motorized transportation. And for 17 years, I didn't speak.
17 years?
17 years. I know, it's hard to believe because I like speaking so much. I like communicating. But it's an important part of communication is listening. And that's what I discovered when I stopped talking. The first thing I discovered was I hadn't been listening.
Who did you want to listen to?
When I stopped talking?
Mm-hmm.
Then I listened to everybody because I learned that everyone has something to say, and everyone has something to teach us. And that was a big lesson.
Now, I can understand from an environmental perspective why you would stop riding in cars. I mean, especially after this oil spill, which obviously affected you at some very deep level. Mm-hmm. The not talking part is more complicated, it seems to me.
Well, very simply, it was I wanted to stop arguing with people. My consciousness changed. And you have to realize that after talking for, 27 years, and then one day not speaking, it's going to make some changes in who you are and how you relate and how you perceive things. It's going to leave some room and some spaces for other things to happen. And I think that's what began to happen in me, and I began to change.
Now, you were communicating with people during this time. Were you, writing notes when people would talk to you?
That was probably the best part. Being silent was, for me, not as a retreat, not to go off somewhere and be silent, but to really be part of the community and to communicate. And I would communicate. Well, the first thing I tried doing was I went to the library and I got a book, Indian Sign Language by Iron Eyes Cody. And I learned how to speak Indian Sign Language. But no one else knew Indian Sign Language in Point Reyes. I had to teach them. But in the meantime, I just used mime and acting things out. Instead of saying I would like some eggs and bacon, I might. And so I'm cracking the egg open and beating it up, knowing that that's scrambled eggs, or I'm pointing my thumb up in the air, and that's, I want them up. And the bacon, I would push my nose up, look like a pig, and bite my hand.
Now, the other thing you did is you walked across the country.
Yes.
During this time of silence. And, you know, it's worth pointing out you're a black guy. And
a tall black guy.
What kind
as
of,
I've been described.
What kind of responses did you get?
Well, you forgot I carried a banjo. Mm. And that changes everything. You know, because I'm not only a tall black guy, I'm a tall black guy with a banjo. And I realized that changed a lot of things, because as I played my banjo and walking along a road, people would see me and they would wave and they would pretend like they're playing a banjo and they would wave again and they'd drive by. And if I put my banjo away, people might look at me with suspicion and go, who is that guy? What's he doing walking on the side of the road? Bring my banjo out, waving, smile. So needless to say, I carried the banjo with me everywhere I went, and I played music.
So would people just drive up and say, hi, how are you doing?
And do you play that thing?
Now, I have to ask you, during these 17 years of silence, when no one's around, did you ever hum? Did you ever sing a song in the shower or anything like that?
I remember on three occasions, accidents, when I spoke within the first year. One was I bumped into someone in the grocery and I said, oh, excuse me. Oh, my goodness, did I say that? I don't know. And the other was I was watching television in a motel somewhere. It had cable TV. There was Charlton Heston. It was the Ten Commandments. He raised his hands up. He spread them out wide. The Red Sea parted. And I said, oh, my God.
The power of the cinema.
Jeez. Did I say that? And the third time, I'm going to leave that for my book.
How long did it take you to walk across the country?
It took me 7 years and one day.
7 years?
7 years and a day, right.
How did you support yourself during this time?
Oh, various ways. When I started out, I had a concert. I mean, I have a nonprofit organization which helps Planet Walk, but that didn't raise enough money to support me all the way. But it did raise some to get me started. And we raised some money, and I got as far as Washington State to Port Townsend. And someone commissioned me to build a boat. And I had learned how to build boats, so I built a little wooden dory, which I rowed across Puget Sound. And they took possession of it on the other side, Bainbridge Island, and I just continued walking on to Missoula, Montana, where I went to graduate school for a year. I had written them about 2 years earlier and applied to graduate school there. And they said, great, well, when are you going to get here? And I said, in about 2 years. I'm on my way.
And you actually, I mean, the thing that I find astonishing about the story is you not only got a master's degree, you got your PhD during this whole period of silence. I mean, you didn't talk during school, and you were piling up these degrees.
You know, it says something, doesn't it?
I'm surprised they let you get away with this.
I'm surprised they let me in the school at all. That's another interesting thing that I discovered, is that there were people in institutions that were so intrigued by what I was doing, the statement that I was making with my life, that they wanted to be a part of that and they wanted to help. And so right now I can tell you that what I did, what I accomplished, I didn't accomplish this by myself.
Why, after 17 years of silence, did you start talking again?
It was time. It was just time. And the only thing I needed to do was look for the opportunity, which I decided was the 20th anniversary of Earth Day. So I could remind myself that I would be speaking for the environment and why I did that. With not riding in cars, it was a little bit different. There was a chance to work for the Coast Guard after my dissertation, which was on oil spills, and the Exxon Valdez happened, and I had this very hot dissertation topic on oil spills.
The thing you were studying was what to do about oil spills.
Right.
And then this disaster happened, Exxon Valdez, and the Coast Guard called you up.
Called me up, and they wanted me to come to work for them at the Oil Pollution Act of 1990 staff. And by the time we had agreed on everything, I was all the way up in Vermont. And finally they said, well, listen, we're going to send you a plane ticket so you can get down here and work. And I said, gee, you know, I don't really fly in planes. Thinking in the back of my head, you know, I should have told them right from the beginning that I don't use motorized vehicles. And the guy says, well, listen, there's a train. You can take the train and we'll reimburse you. And I said, actually, I don't use trains either. He says, you don't drive in cars, do you? I said, no, I don't. He says, you know, we heard something about that. We'll get back to you. Well, I thought that was the end of that, you know. But that's not what happened. They called back and said, well, our director says we need to have you here. How can you get here? And I said, well, I can ride a bicycle. Okay, he says, how long will that take you? And I figured about all the places I had to go and what I had to do. And I said, oh, in about 2 months, we'll be waiting. And so I rode my bike and got to Washington. And I worked for the Coast Guard for a year as a project manager. And we had agreed on if it was somewhere within 300 miles, I could ride my bike to visit or see a site or something. And if it was further than that, I was the manager, I could send someone. And if I really had to be there and I had to talk to people, they would set up a satellite or a video link. And we would do all those things. We did all those things while I worked for the Coast Guard and rode around Capitol Hill on a bicycle and put my suit on when I got to, you know, the offices of other agencies. And people finally start asking me as they see me get back on my bicycle, and they, who do you work for? The Coast Guard. What Coast Guard? The U.S. Coast Guard.
For another few years, John Francis still refused to ride in cars, trains, and planes, but his thinking changed one day during a walk in Venezuela. He was repeatedly harassed by security guards simply because he was on foot. He realized he would have avoided the whole hassle if he could have simply driven away. Refusing to ride in a car had become its own kind of prison. John Francis is a goodwill ambassador for the United Nations and founder of the nonprofit group Planet Walk.